Part 3. Chapter 16. Ramon's mind was slow to react. He had to answer, but none of the things that came to his lips was the right thing. I'm Ramon Espejo, and I'm you, and why should I tell you who I am, pendejo? He felt his mouth open and close, and saw the shock in his twin's eyes shift to something else, something more dangerous. The other man's grip on his knife tensed.
Aliens, Ramon spat out. There's fucking aliens out there. They took me prisoner. You've got to help me.
It was the key. The other man's tension eased a little. His head turned, and he looked at Ramon, measuring him, his eyes still radiating mistrust, but no longer on the edge of violence. Ramon leaned forward, moving slowly and being careful to do nothing that might startle the other man. Ramon looked at him closely for the first time, feeling an odd fascination. After all, in spite of his memories to the contrary, this was the first human being he'd ever actually met. His twin was filthy and unkempt. The light stubble that had often darkened his chin was already a moth-eaten beard. Distrust shone in his black eyes. His right hand was wrapped in bloody cloth, and Ramon realized, with a profound sense of vertigo, that in that mess of soiled bandages, a finger was missing. A finger from which he had been born. But the other Ramon also looked wrong, somehow. He had expected it to be like looking into a mirror, but it was not. The face he was accustomed to seeing reflected back was different than this. It was more like seeing a video recording of himself. Perhaps he thought his features were not so symmetrical as he'd liked to believe. Also, the voice was higher than he believed his own to be, and slightly whiny. The voice he heard and hated when he heard himself recorded. The other Ramon's bearded chin jutted aggressively. What did he look like in his twin's eyes? Finer hair, fewer lines and creases in his skin. No scars, and thin whiskers. He would appear to be a younger man, and if the other Ramon didn't already feel that he was seeing himself, there was no reason for him to suspect what the aliens had done. Ramon's advantage was that he knew what had happened, who he was, and all that the other man knew. The other man's advantage was that he hadn't half-drowned, and he had a knife.
"Please," Ramon said, searching for things he could say that would make him seem more plausible. "I've got to get back to Fiddler's Jump. You got a van?"
"I look like I have a fucking van," the other man said, raising his arms out at his sides like Christ crucified. "I've been running from those fucking things for a week. How is it you came to get loose from them just here and now, eh?"
It was a good question. They weren't near the alien hive, and the timing was too convenient. Ramon licked his lips.
"It's the first time they took me out,"
Ramon said, deciding to keep as near the truth as he could.
"They were holding me in a tank, under a mountain up north of here. They told me there was someone they were hunting. I think they were using me, seeing what I could eat, and like that. I think maybe they didn't know much, you know, about people."
The other man considered this. Ramon kept his gaze away from the knife. Better that neither of them think of it. He heard himself going on, his voice thin and shrill. He sounded afraid.
"I tried to fight against them, but they had this thing in my neck. Right here, you can see where it went in. If I did anything they didn't like, they shocked me. I've been walking for days. Please, man, you can't leave me here."
"I'm not going to leave you here," the other man said. There was disgust in his voice. Disgust, and perhaps superiority. "I've been running from them, too. They blew up my van. But I had a few tricks. Fucked them up pretty good."
"That was you," Ramon said, trying to make his voice sound admiring instead of false. "You're the one that blew up the Unea."
"The what?" "You only get one slip like that," Ramon told himself. "Hold it together, cabron.
At least until you have the knife.
The flying box thing. That's what they called it.
Ah, the other man said. Yeah, I'm the one. I saw you too. I was watching.
So you saw the thing they put in my neck?
The other man seemed reluctantly to agree that Ramon's story had some truth to it. Ramon could see it in the man's stance when he decided not to kill him.
How did you get away? The other man asked.
Chupacabra killed the alien. Came out of nowhere. The leash came free while they were fighting, and I got out of there.
The other man smiled to himself. Ramon decided to let him think they hadn't seen through his plan with the flat furs. Better that the other Ramon spend his time thinking how clever he was and how stupid everyone else could be.
What's your name, anyway? The other man asked.
David, Ramon said, pulling a name out of the air. David Penasco. I live down in Amadora. I'm a banker with Union Trust. I was camping by myself, maybe a month ago. They took me when I was sleeping.
Union Trust's got a branch in Amadora, the other man asked.
Yeah, Ramon said.
He didn't know if it was true, didn't know if there was some other memory that hadn't grown back yet that would rip his story apart. So he plain, barefaced lied it through and prayed.
Has been for about 6 months.
Son of a bitch, the other man said. Well, get off your ass, David. We've got work to do if we're going to get out of here. I got maybe a third of a raft finished.
If there's going to be two of us, you better get to work. Maybe later you can tell me what you know about those pinche motherfuckers.
The other man turned and started walking back into the forest. Ramon followed. The clearing was 20 meters or so into the woods, and the man hadn't bothered to make a shelter or a fire pit. This wasn't a place to live. It was a construction site. 4 sheaves of bamboo-like cane lay bound with strips of ice root bark, the red skin of the cane glittering as it died as if it had been lacquered. Pontoons, Ramon thought, laced together with thin branches and saplings young enough to be hewn with the serrated back edge of the field knife. They would float. It wouldn't be anything near watertight. The river would be splashing onto their legs and asses the whole way down if they didn't have something to cover the raft floor. And the sheaves were too small and too loosely bound. It was damn impressive for some crazed pendejo out by himself with a wounded hand and a demon out of hell trotting after him. But it wouldn't get one of them to Fiddler's Jump, much less two.
What? The man said.
Just looking, Ramon replied. We're going to need more cane. You want me to cut it? Just show me where you found it.
The man considered the offer with a pinched, sour face. Ramon knew the calculation going on behind those dark eyes. Ramon, or David, whatever his name was now, was going to harvest faster than the injured man himself, but it meant giving him the knife.
I'll do it, the man said, nodding toward the deeper forest farther from the river. You go see if you can find some good branches to put between them, and some food, maybe. Be back here before sundown. We'll try to get this son of a bitch ready to haul down to the water in the morning.
Yeah, okay, Ramon said.
The man spat and stalked off to the south, leaving him alone.
Ramon scratched at his elbow where the knot of scar tissue was growing back, and turned to walk into the gloom beneath the trees. He realized he'd never asked the man his name.
Of course he hadn't. He already knew. The dread grew in him that the other Ramon would think the omission strange. He had to be more careful. The rest of the day was spent dragging falling branches and wide ice root leaves back to the campsite and making up the story he could tell his twin. He stopped once to crack open some sug beetles and eat the raw flesh. Uncooked, they were saltier and the meat slick and unpleasant. There wasn't time, though, for anything more. He tried not to wonder what had happened between Manek and the Chupacabra. Which of the two had lost, and which was still under the roof of branches, hunting him. It didn't change what needed doing, so there was no point spending valuable time on the question. By sundown, He and his twin had gathered another 6 sheaves and perhaps a third of the branches that they would need to make the raft floor. The man seemed pleased by Ramon's wide, soft pile of ice root leaves as well, though he didn't go so far as to say it. Ramon boiled a double handful of sug beetles, and his twin roasted a Cooper's dragon, one of the small bird-like lizards that inhabited the low branches. The dragon had an unnerving way of writhing as it cooked, as if the flesh were still living even though both brains had been cut out and the thin, pale blood drained from the body. They made small conversation, Ramon careful to ask the man's name and background. Then they planned for the next day, how to carry the branches and sheaves to the water for assembly, how much more would need to be harvested, whether they needed to strip more bark to use for rope. "You've done this before," the man said, and Ramon felt a pang of distress. Maybe he'd come across as knowing too much. "I explore a little, when I can. Most of the time I'm stuck behind a desk," Ramon said, trying to seem flattered. "Banking, you know. But the money's good. You ever do any prospecting?" "No," Ramon said. "Just go out, camp, look around, you know. Get away from people for a while." The man's expression softened a little, as Ramon had known it would. He felt a twinge of guilt at playing on the man's feelings that way. "What about you?" Ramon asked, and his twin shrugged. "I spend a lot of time in the field," he said. "Not much point staying in town. It's a pretty good living, if you know what you're doing. A good season, I can pull in 6, maybe 7,000 chits." That was a gross exaggeration. Ramon had never taken in more than 4,000, even at the best of times. 2.5 was nearer the average, and there had been several seasons he hadn't managed more than 1,000. The man's dark eyes seemed to challenge him, so he shook his head, feigning amazement. "That's really good," Ramon said. "It ain't hard, you know what you're doing," the man said, settling back. "What happened to your hand?" Ramon asked. "Fucking aliens," the man said, and started to unwrap the blood-stiffened cloth. "I was shooting at them, and my gun blew up. Fucked me up pretty good." Ramon leaned close. In the firelight, it was hard to see how much of the redness was the swollen flesh itself, and how much was reflected flames. The skin of the palm looked like taco meat that had been left out overnight. Where the index finger had been was a rough stump, the flesh burned and scarred to an oddly beautiful opalescent silver. "You cauterized it," he said. His mind went back to the camp where he'd found his cigarette case, where Manek had revealed to him the story of his doubling. This was why the man had spent so long there. He'd been recovering from the self-treatment of his wound. "Yeah," the man said, and his voice was casual and drawling, in a way that Ramon knew meant that he was proud of having done it. "I heated up the knife until it glowed, and then used that. Had to. I was bleeding all over the place. There was some bone I had to cut out, too." Ramon suppressed a smile. They were tough sons of bitches, him and his twin. He couldn't help feeling a little proud of himself, too, for what the other man had done. "Fever?" he asked. "On and off," the man admitted. "No streaks up my arm, though, so it looks like no blood poisoning. Or else I'd be dead by now anyway, eh? So tell me how you got caught by those devils." Ramon launched into his tale. A little over a month ago, he'd been out camping by himself in the far north. His lover, Carmina, had left him, and he'd wanted to spend some time alone where she couldn't find him and his friends couldn't offer sympathy. He'd seen a flying box, gone to investigate, and the aliens had done something, knocked him out, drugged him. He didn't remember much about that part. Then he'd been imprisoned in a tank until they pulled him out and told him to go hunting. It was a simple enough story to remember, and not so far from the truth that he'd be likely to get caught flat-footed. And the other Ramon would likely sympathize. He talked about the explosion that had ruined the Eunea, the forced march,
the attack by the Chupacabra, and his own escape. He pretended to be amazed when the man explained the strategy behind the flat fur corpses. The delight the other took in his own cleverness started to become annoying. If Ramon didn't nod or make appreciative noises at the right moment, his twin glared at him. The whole thing was a manipulation from start to finish, and it seemed to work. When Ramon explained how he needed to be away from civilization, that the comfort offered by friends was as painful and humiliating as being mocked, the man nodded to himself. And when the tale was finished, he didn't comment on it. He wouldn't. It wasn't the sort of thing men did. "Sleep in shifts?" the man asked. "Sure," Ramon said. "Probably better that way. I'll take first. I'm not tired." It was a lie. He was deeply weary. But he'd had that period of unconsciousness that was almost like sleep after he'd pulled himself from the river. The other Ramon hadn't even had that. And anyway, it was best to do the sorts of things that a banker from Amadoro would do to ingratiate himself to his rescuer. The man shrugged and held out his field knife. Ramon hesitated for a moment, then took it. The slightly sticky feel of the leather grip, the balanced weight. It was familiar, and yet different than he remembered it. A moment's consideration told him that it was his body that had changed. He'd never held it without calluses on his hands. The other man misread his expression. "It's not much," the man said. "It's all that we've got. Won't fight off a chupacabra or red jackets, but..." "No trouble," Ramon said. "Thanks." The man grunted, lay down, and turned his back to the fire. Ramon tested the heft of the knife again, growing used to it in his new hands. These unlikely companions he traveled with, men and aliens, seemed to be pretty comfortable handing him knives. Manek had done it because it knew it was safe. The man had done it because he assumed Ramon was an ally. It was a mistake he would have made himself, obviously. Ramon peered into the darkness, careful not to let the light of their modest cookfire blind him to the shadows, and considered his options. The man had accepted him, for the time being, but it was a long way to Fiddler's Jump, and if what Manek had said was true, Ramon would grow to more closely resemble his old self before they got there. Sooner or later, the man would figure out that something was wrong. And even if he didn't, Ramon didn't know what he'd do when they got back to the colony. A judge would be hard-pressed to accept that he was the real, legal Ramon Espejo, and the Enya might well decide that he should die along with Manek's people. Nothing good would come from two Ramons walking out of the bush together. The smart thing to do would be to kill the man. He had a knife. His twin was snoring and wounded. One quick slice to the neck, and the problem would be gone. He'd make his way south, resume his life, and the other man's bones would never be found. It was what needed to happen. And yet, he couldn't do it.
"Under what circumstances do you kill?"
Manek's question echoed in his memory. Ramon settled down for the long, slow hours of his watch, and found himself less and less able to answer the question. At first light, they went back to the work of building the raft. Ramon retied the cane floats, his two hands cinching them tighter than his twin could manage. They considered how many branches they'd need to finish the structure. It was a quick, easy negotiation. Ramon and the other man approached the problem the same way, came to the same conclusions. The only real difference was in his twin's refusal to give over a larger share of the work. It made sense that the uninjured man should bear the heavier load, but his twin was bent on putting the soft-handed Amadora banker in his place, and Ramon recognized the impulse clearly enough to know there was no point arguing. By noon, they had enough raw materials to put the raft together. Ramon fashioned a rough harness from two cut branches and a length of bright blue Panama ivy, and used it to haul the cane and branches down the short path to the water. The man allowed him that much, bringing the armful of stripped bark and ice-root leaves instead. Ramon figured it meant his twin was feeling tired. The sandbar was smaller than Ramon remembered it, but just as cluttered with debris. Without consulting the man walking behind him, he pulled the load to the bank just downstream. The bar created a still place in the waters. The eddy was a good place to test their raft before they launched themselves out into the unforgiving flow. Ramon shrugged off the harness and squatted on the bank. In the still water, he could see himself reflected and his twin standing behind him. Two men, similar, but not yet identical. Ramon's growing beard was softer and lighter. His hair hung closer to his head than it had before, changing the shape of his face a little. Still, they might have been brothers. Since he knew to look for it, he could see where the moles on his twin's cheek and neck were echoed by minute discolorations on his own. The scar on his belly twinged. "Not bad," the man said, and spat thoughtfully into the water, the ripples disturbing its soft mirror. The raft was going to be big. The lower gravity of Sao Paulo lent itself to fast-growing trees, and rather than take the time to cut the long saplings twice, they'd use them all at their full height. It wasn't luxury, but there would be easy room for them both. "We should put some shelter on it, though." "Like a cabin?" Ramon asked, looking at the collection of sticks before him. "A lean-to. Something to sleep in. Get out of the weather. And if we got enough wood, we can add a fire grate, too. Line the bottom with ice-root leaves, fill it a couple hands high with good sand, and we can keep warm on the river." Ramon squinted at the man, then upriver, back toward where Manek and the Chupacabra had done battle. He tried to guess how long he'd been in the water, how far he'd swum. He couldn't be sure. It had felt like a long time, a huge distance, but he'd been on the verge of death, so his impressions probably weren't all that good. "Let's put those on farther down the river," he said. "I want to get away from here first." "You scared?" the man jeered. His tone was taunting, and Ramon felt anger and embarrassment surge through him. Ramon could see the frustration in the other man, the anger always simmering under the skin, ready to be fanned awake, the desire to strike out and make himself feel better by hurting someone, and felt its twin in his own breast. He'd have to tread carefully here, or they'd end up in a fight neither could afford. "Scared to face down a pissed-off chupacabra with a field knife and a stick," he said. "Anyone isn't scared of that, stupid or crazy." The man's expression hardened at the insult, but he shrugged casually. "There's two of us," he said, turning half away from Ramon. "We could take him." "Maybe," Ramon said, letting the obvious lie stand. They could no more take down a chupacabra than flap their arms and fly to Fiddler's Jump. If he pressed it, though, they'd end up fighting about it. "Thing is, what if the alien won?" "Against a chupacabra?" the man asked, incredulous. It was easy to summon up the bravado to say they could kill the beast, but hard to stretch the imagination far enough to think that Manek might win against the same odds. Ramon kept his expression somber. "It was looking pretty even when I got out of there," he said. "The alien had a gun of some kind, and it shot the chupacabra at least twice. Maybe that weakened it. I wasn't going to hang around to find out how it ended, you know. Besides, if the fucking alien is still alive and still has that gun, we don't want it catching up with us." "Fine," the man said. "If it makes you feel better, we'll head downstream for a day or two. We can pull in somewhere, add a lean-to and a fire pit. Maybe check the cane, make sure it's still tied tight enough." That was a dig. The man was still smarting over Ramon's insisting that he could tie the floats better with two hands than his twin could with one. Once Ramon would have risen to the bait, taken offense, maybe pushed it into a fight. But not now. "Fine, pendejo," Ramon thought. "Dig at me all you want. I know how scared you are, too." "Good plan," was all he said.
Lashing the branches together and binding them to the cane floats was long work, but not difficult. Ramon found himself falling into a rhythm, setting the wood in place, tying it on one side, then the other, then in the center where it crossed another branch. 1, 2, 3, 4, then start again. He fell into the work, abandoning himself to the sheer physicality of it. His hands and feet, unprotected by calluses, hurt and blistered. He ignored the pain. It was just part of the package. If the other man could cut away his own stump of a finger bone, Ramon could sure as shit stand scraping up his palms a little. His twin kept pace as best he could, but the crippled hand slowed him badly. Ramon could feel the frustration rising in the man as he struggled not to be shown up by a pinche banker. As the sun dipped toward the treetops on the opposite shore, Ramon noticed, with some satisfaction, that the other man's bandage showed the bright red tinge of new blood. At the end, they laid the ice root leaves over the branches, tacking the broad, leathery fronds together until they were like a carpet. Not wholly waterproof, but enough that they wouldn't be getting their asses wet with river water all the way south. The raft wasn't much to look at. There was no rudder, and only an improvised paddle to steer with at the stern. It wasn't more than 2.5 meters square. It was a decent size for a wrestling match, but as a way to travel, it would be pretty damn close quarters. Still, all it had to do was stay on top of the big river long enough for them to float down to Fiddler's Jump, and when they dragged it out into the lagoon, it floated high off the water, and when they both clambered on, it felt solid and secure. "Not fucking bad, David," his twin said. "You did a man's job of it, eh?" "We did all right," he agreed. "You want to get out of here?" And as the words left his mouth, they heard a sound, the distant, gurgling cry of a chupacabra. It sounded as if it were in pain. Ramon's belly went tight, and the other man's face was pale. "Yeah," his twin said. "We might as well get going." Ramon paddled them out from behind the sandbar and nearer to the center of the river, where the current was fastest. The other man squatted at the raft's edge, looking back. Neither the beast nor Manek emerged from the forest, and the screaming call didn't come again. Ramon, settling back to steer, couldn't help feeling they'd had a near miss. Another night on shore would have ended badly for them. Maybe even another hour. It was a good fucking thing that his twin had tried so hard to keep up. A good thing that Ramon hadn't been able to bring himself to kill the man in the night. One man would never have been able to finish the raft alone in time. But the sound of the predator, even if it was in pain, also filled him with a strange melancholy. If the chupacabra lived, then Manek was dead. The Athanai of his cohort had been killed, attempting to protect his people from the violence that had tracked them across stars and centuries. And the creature who had frustrated Manek's Tatakroida? A jumped-up little monkey from the badlands of Mexico, who'd stumbled on the hive while running from the law, and who even now didn't have any idea what the consequences of his discovery would be. At least Manek had died trying. Died fighting. There was some honor in that, even if it had failed its people. In an odd way that surprised and disquieted him, he found he almost missed Manek, now that it was over, now that he was free. And in spite of all the pain it had visited upon him, in spite of the hatred he'd felt for the alien at times, Ramon couldn't help but feel a pang of regret and sorrow at the thought of its terrible death. "Still better you than me, monster," Ramon said under his breath. "Better you than me."